What is up, everybody? Welcome to Left My Wallet. I'm Antonio the Promised Thomas, also known as Thomas Santel, and I want to thank you for tuning in today because I have Garrett, Double G, Garrett Gonzalez here with me to talk some NBA playoffs, a few other tidbits as well. But Garrett, we got it out of the way, the intro. Usually I do a solo intro on the show. But I know you have said in the past, the intro is the hardest part of the show. Yeah, it is. It is awkward. For me. I think we got this one, though. I think we're good.
Yeah. I write whenever I do podcasts. If there's a guest, like, for instance, if Kenny Omega is on and I want to introduce him in a way that's fun, in a way that might make him giggle, in a way that may make Dave giggle. And so I write it out and I put it on the big screen and I'm like reading it so that I can put the right inflection. And right. I've even screwed that up before.
No, so. It's very, you, when you don't have it written out, you can babble, you can like backtrack and then you keep talking in circles and it's like, oh fuck, we can't edit this. Damn it. So it's like, yeah, no, I didn't have this. I don't write mine out. I just, we'll do a couple takes if I don't like them, but here we are, cold, calling it on the fly, kind of like how I like to do it in the ring, and lot going on. Last time I had you on, you were my last guest, actually, because we have so much going on.
Back to back,
man. For you are the Johnny Vandermeer of this show. Johnny Vandermeer, a record that will never be broken, back-to-back no-hitters. So
yes.
you are back-to-back here on this show. So a new record here, never been done before.
There we go.
So someone will have to do that three times, back-to-back-to-back, to break it. NBA playoffs, we're recording this Wednesday afternoon. My Celtics completely tanked in the third quarter. My friend said Jason Tatum turned into Jason Tantrum. You know, your Warriors playing tonight. I want to get a feel because you got all the Bay Area podcasts that we'll get into as well. I want to hear why Golden State, in your opinion, is why they are the current betting favorites, which I think they're +120. But I want to hear why they're going to beat Dallas, they're going to beat Miami, or the Celtics.
So it's so interesting that they're the betting favorite because I feel like the entire non-Warriors NBA universe is so against them to lose. They don't want to see them again. They want to see a little bit of new blood. They want to see Luka. They want to see Jason Tatum in the finals. I find it so interesting because I watch this team all season long. And there were points where I was like, okay, these guys are actually pretty good. And then there were others when some of their vets went down. I was like, God, you know, they don't have as much depth as I actually thought. I think the Dallas matchup is so intriguing because
+650, by the way, for Dallas, which is it's kind of ridiculous. I think if you're just purely from a betting standpoint, I mean, those are great odds, +650 to win it all.
And then you hammer Luka because if they win, he's going to, you know, play very well. So the reason why I think it's intriguing is because all year long, in my head, there were two teams that the Warriors really had to worry about in the West. One of them was the Memphis Grizzlies. And man, like, what a tough team. And they were a really hard out, even though the Warriors did win in six. The second team was the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns were, they looked like the who's next team in the NBA this year. I think they won the most games. Chris Paul looked like he had sort of figured out how to not break down, and then he did break down at the end there. So maybe he didn't figure it out, but they just looked like the team. And I was like, okay, you know, there was a Christmas matchup between the Warriors and the Suns, I think. That was like really good game. And I'm like, man, these guys are good. They match up really well against the Warriors. These guys are going to be a hard out. Back then, you know, 3-4 months ago, if you told me the Warriors were facing the Mavericks in the conference finals, I would have said, oh, wow, we're going to boat race these guys. That isn't the case anymore. Jason Kidd has somehow just turned these guys into beasts. Like the way that they blitz ball handlers, you know, Devin Booker was just like, can you guys just leave me alone? Like, right. I'm just not about this life. And they're going to do the same thing against the Warriors. The Warriors are going to have to be really smart about who they put the ball in the hands of, how they attack the blitz, what their outlets are going to be, where the cuts are going to be. It's fascinating to me that the X's and O's and the chess matchup of what this series is going to be is tremendous. And, you know, you and I go back with Jason Kidd when he's one of the best players in the NBA.
Oh, I remember reading about him in Sports Illustrated when he was still in high school. He came out a year later than Weber, those guys, Mashburn, I think. Jason Kidd went with Cal, Todd Bozeman, Lamon Murray, and then obviously as a player, and then kind of had been hit or miss as a coach, had a lot, you know, some issues with players, personal stuff. But he's, man, this team, he's taken kind of like your Giants, the sum of, like, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have a guy who's going to be an all-time great in Luka, but I mean, you know, Jalen Brunson, Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, Porzingis, when he's healthy, he's not the guy that was drafted by the Knicks, but he still can make a difference. I mean,
but that's who they traded, though, was Porzingis. They actually got rid of him, which kind of like, you know, Porzingis was the guy that Cuban bet big on, and then they got Luka, and they're like, oh wow, like we can actually play this, you know, 1-2 punch action. And then they're like, nope, Porzingis just like screws things up for Luka.
Yeah.
We got to ship him off to Washington for, you know, I forget what they, I got, I think Dinwiddie,
oh, that's
was
right,
part of that
they got,
trade.
No,
yeah.
They got Dinwiddie. What am I, yeah, thinking? I don't even know why I said Porzingis. Baby brain. It's having an 8-month-old.
Yeah, so. And it's also because Porzingis was just, you know, felt like he was going to be such a big part of their team when they signed him.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. This team went Dallas a couple years ago were like an all-time great offense. Now they go to being kind of like the Celtics, where they're really defensive-minded and kind of gritty. You know, you got the one superstar, really gritty. Down low, do you think does Golden State's front court worry you? I know Draymond, you know, is older. All these guys are older, but Draymond especially, can he hold up? Can he get, you know, two more rounds to go, specifically those 7 games? What do you think the front court down low, do you think that's an issue for your team?
Last series, it should have been, right? Because Memphis with Jaren Jackson, who's the ultimate five in today's NBA, because he can also play defense on the perimeter, and he can block shots, and he's quick. He can handle the ball. He can shoot three. Now he could be a little reckless sometimes, which he had some really good games, and then he had some bad ones. That was the series where I was just so scared about the front court. In this series, they, you know, who do the Mavericks have? They have Dwight Powell. They have Kleber. So I don't think this is a series to worry about Draymond. I think it is it is less about the front court maybe than any series that they've played so far. Like, they had to handle Jokic, which was a giant project for them, and you know, they just let him go to town and nobody else did anything for Denver. So I think it's going to be interesting, the matching, because Kidd is one of the things I'm looking for tonight in tonight's game. Kidd is going to start Dwight Powell, very similarly to how the Warriors start Kevon Looney. They like the way that those guys start the games. They're not going to do anything crazy. The players like them being in those places, but they're a much better team when Kleber's the five, because he stretches the defense out.
Right. They're going to start him. They're going to play 15 minutes or so, kind of like JaVale McGee.
Yeah.
But it allows them to run and set the tempo of the game.
Right. And so he's not going to make a knuckleheaded play and, you know, just, you know, because the worry is like, if you got Kleber and he's like, oh, you know, I'm open from three, I'm going to shoot this. Boom, fast break on the other side. Warriors get up 6-0. No. Dwight Powell's not going to do that. Ball's going to be in Luka's hands. He's going to, you know, he's going to stretch the shot clock. So my main worry in this series, Luka's the biggest headache in the entire playoffs, because he is so, you can't solve him. He's going to get his. It's all step backs. It's all fade. He's got the best go-to setup fadeaway I've seen since Larry Bird. And that's big praise, right?
Yeah.
Larry Bird had the best one. I know Kobe and Jordan tried to add
Jordan's,
that to
Jordan's
their games.
That was mid-range, though. We're talking about from 30 feet out. You know, well,
they added those things to their game later in their career when they couldn't get to the bucket as easily as they could. But Larry Bird needed to have that from jump, because he wasn't going to be the most athletic guy blowing by. He needed to have that extra move to set stuff up, and that's how Luka uses it, right? So he's a headache. I think the thing I'm most worried about for the Warriors outside of this Luka thing is the blitzing defense that their guards and their wings do. Steph Curry brings up the ball, and if they run any action where they bring a possible screener up, what the Mavs are going to do is they're going to take the screener's man and they're going to take the guy guarding Steph and they're going to try to trap him. This happened a lot during their regular season games. Now, Draymond didn't play in three of those games. Draymond is one of their best decision makers, and he handles the ball a lot. So that stagnated the Warriors' offense. Now we have Jordan Poole, who's kind of come into his own late, but he's also a very young player, and it's his first playoffs. This is his biggest series. He's going to have to make smart decisions, because if they blitz Steph and Steph goes to Jordan Poole, he's going to have, on that side of the court, on the strong side of the court, he'll have it'll probably be on the weak side of the court, but he'll have an advantage. He's going to have to make the right decision still. Is it, I'm going to attack because the Mavs don't really have any shot blockers, or I can attack, but maybe I don't have the right angle, the right lane. I'm going to pull it out, because when Steph gets trapped by two guys, what's Steph going to do? Steph's going to run a wide receiver route to get back open and hopefully confuse the Mavs defense. So Jordan Poole's going to have to make really strong decisions. I think Draymond being back really helps them in sort of breaking this blitzing trap. But again, it's going to be fascinating, because if Jason Kidd sees, oh, this is what they're doing to beat this, now I'm going to throw something at you that changes what you can do. So that's why the X's and O's piece is going to be so fascinating for this series.
And you got Otto Porter, who looks like he's going to be healthy for today. You got Porter, you got Kuminga, Toscano Anderson between small forward, power forward. You got a lot of options there where you guys can kind of do like the Celtics do a lot, where you go with a smaller lineup. They get Robert Williams out of there. They got Horford. They can run a lot more. You see it with Miami with Adebayo, who was bringing the ball up the court yesterday. And, you know, you have some versatile role players there.
Yep.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to be fun. I was kind of like you. I was like, Phoenix by far the best record in the league. If Phoenix, you know, nobody thought Dallas was going to beat them, but I thought Phoenix was kind of going to run to the finals, and now it's pretty interesting. I haven't, yeah. I got to be honest, aside from the Celtics, I haven't paid much attention to the rest of the NBA playoffs as far as watching them, but this is going to be fun. I'm going to watch what I can. Nights, you know, nights are a lot earlier now with a little one, but
I actually got a Jason Kidd story for you that I think you'll enjoy.
Sure.
Okay, so you know the history of J. Kidd. You know, wins the title to Mavericks, and then he tries to get into coaching. J. Kidd has some things, you know, in his past that I imagine he's not very proud of. There's, you know, there was the abuse thing with his ex-wife. There was a one-person car accident. So as he's rebuilding sort of his career post-playing, and, you know, I've talked to Andre Iguodala's wife about this. Her biggest fear is, like, what happens when NBA is over? What is he going to do with his time? Where is he going to get the competitive thing that drives him? You know, how are we going to do this to make an easy transition to the post-career? And I imagine that was really hard for him because he was just, you know, from 19 years old, you know, or 20 years old coming out as a sophomore to the NBA and immediately being really good. So one of my buddies, who's also a co-founder at Nextdoor, he got to know Jay a little bit because they both went to Cal. And, you know, he's... Nextdoor is a tech company, and a lot of these NBA players are kind of interested because they have a lot of money. Like, where can you invest? So he's a little bit of a liaison for those guys because he knows certain people who know people.
Or they'll produce something. They'll be the producer. They'll essentially give money to a movie or something.
Sure.
And
that's
be
like
labeled
Durant,
as the
LeBron,
producer.
All those guys do that. Yeah. So he told me, my buddy Prakash told me, he's like, hey, I think Jay is coming into the office. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, this is kind of crazy. And so he brings Jason in the office. I basically walk up to him and I just shake his hand and, you know, tell him all this stuff. But, you know, you're my favorite college player ever and blah, blah, blah. But it's kind of one of those cool things. Like, I rarely ever sort of fanboy in those scenarios, but like Jay's like one of my top five favorite basketball players of all time. That's how high in his esteem I hold him. So basically what he was trying to do was he was trying to rebuild his reputation. And one of those things he was trying to do was possibly coach at Cal. Now Cal was not going to hire somebody who did not have their college degree. So he wasn't going to be able to get that job unless he finished his degree because, you know, he left at the end of his sophomore year. And so he comes in and, you know, we say hi and I want to take a picture with him. And he's like, hey, all right, this is cool. And we have like one of those little plastic hoops up in the office. He's like, how about we take a picture where I'm defending this hoop and you're coming down and you're going to dunk on me. And I was like, no, I don't want that picture. I just want like the homie hangout J. Kidd picture. And so we took the picture. But so I would hear a lot about Jay because my buddy Prakash, and he was like, yep, he's going to get this assistant job with the Lakers. And I was like, well, that makes sense because before there was a Woj bomb, Woj was writing for Yahoo, and Woj wrote kind of a hit piece on LeBron, and it was during the 2008 Redeem Team Olympics, and like Coach K did not want the LeBron experience because he didn't enjoy the 2004 LeBron experience, but J. Kidd was like, I got him. Don't worry about it. And I don't know if it was about LeBron or if it was just about sort of the LeBron experience with the friends and
I remember. Okay, now this brings it back to when the Lakers were before they hired Vogel. That's right. Jason Kidd was one of the names because of the relationship he had with LeBron. All right. Yeah.
So I thought, oh, they're basically hiring J. Kidd to sit as an assistant and then he's going to take over. Well, that's not what happened because they won the title. So Vogel comes back for another 2 years and then that Mavs job opened up. And I don't know if you remember this, but Damian Lillard wanted Kidd in Portland.
Yes, they did not want Chauncey Billups.
So, well, I think J. Kidd was like definitely like his clear number one, right. But he also liked Chauncey. And so the reason, so the Portland fan base, media, whatever it was, you know, that fan base did not want Kidd to be there because he had this background issue that wasn't great. So they hire Chauncey, and in the whole process of hiring Chauncey, there's a thing with Chauncey when he was a rookie with the Celtics.
Oh,
supposedly
yeah.
There was a thing with him and Ron Mercer and Antoine Walker and a woman who's claimed that she was sexually assaulted. And so they don't hire Jay, if, you know, that was Damian's guy. And then they hire Chauncey, who also has this thing that they didn't even realize was there. So then Jay gets the Mavs job, and boom, like, here we are. He is fine. I sort of see him, and like, he had this funny quote about Steve Kerr, because like, they were like asking Kerr about Jay, and he's like, oh yeah, I remember Jay as, you know, brilliant, blah 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 blah. And then they asked Jason about Steve Kerr. He's like, oh yeah, he played with MJ. Like, that was all he knew about Steve Kerr. So I see Jay. He kind of has his swagger back, and he did have to sort of, you know, rebuild in order to be the Jason Kidd that he has always been. And it's kind of cool to see him back. And, you know, I know he's always going to have negativity around him just because of those things, you know, and hopefully for his sake, you know, those are way, 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 way in his rear view. And everything is good as far as him being a human being. But yeah, I always root for that guy.
Yeah. And he took, you know, he took the Nets, I think, when they still had Garnett and Pierce, 2014, to the playoffs. Then he was with Milwaukee 5 years, 4 years, actually.
Giannis, all of Giannis's early career.
Yeah, yep. Middleton, too, as well. And then, yeah, you're right. He went on as an assistant with the Lakers. Here's a fact. He's only the 10th head coach in the history of the Mavericks.
Wow.
10. So Don Nelson obviously has a big chunk of that. So does Rick Carlisle.
Yes.
But you'd think, like, Dallas wasn't – they were okay. They were like a fringe playoff team in the 80s with, like, Mark Aguirre, Rolando Blackman. But they were always, like, no better than the fifth seed. I think they were a fringe team. They were good. But they always had their issues. Then in the – I think Nelly was with them when they had Kidd, Jim Jackson, and Mashburn, correct? In the early, mid-90s?
That sounds right. But let's see. Yeah, because he would have been, the Warriors would have fired him. Or no. He would have been with the Warriors until 95, I think.
Okay, so he was there for Run TMC, and then, let me look this up.
So Warriors draft Weber in 94. They're the sixth seed, I think.
Orlando drafted Weber. Remember that?
Yes. And then they traded him.
Penny Hardaway. I still don't understand. Chris Weber is probably my second all time to Jordan. Third to Iverson and Jordan. I still don't understand why they traded Weber for. They got Mitch Richmond and they got somebody else. I think a power forward. I never understood that, man. Chris Weber was so ahead of it. He's what guys, you know, 6'9", 6'10", guys strive to be today. So I never understood that.
Well, you know why? I mean, you know why, but you know, he's rookie of the year with the Warriors, and you kind of wonder, you're like, oh, like, he's the perfect fit. Cause like you said, he's probably born 10 years ahead of his time because of how, all of his skill sets. He didn't want to play center. Nelly wanted him to play center. He didn't want to play center. Nelly, you know, Nelly's an old school basketball guy, right? So the coach is sort of the, you know, Nelly's the head of the, almost, he's not the G, he may have been the GM as well, but
I think he was, I think he was.
He's kind of the head of the organization, right? You know, they had very passive ownership back then, and they do not now, but Nelly's kind of the guy. So when top player butts heads with you know, with the guy, Nelly's not going to go, oh, I'm so sorry, Weber, I'm going to step down because you don't like me. No, Nelly's going to go, like, we can fix this. Like, this guy, you know, he's great, but we can fix this. And, you know, you saw the trade that eventually happens, like Tom Gugliotta. Like, come on.
Oh, that's right.
Could we hold out for a little bit better than Tom Gugliotta?
That's right. That's who it was, Tom Gugliotta, NC State. He was a pretty – listen, he was a pretty good player. He kind of got a bad rap because he was in that trade.
He was fine. He was, yeah, was totally fine. Yeah. But he was not going to be one of the top, you know, 30 players in the NBA. Right. So anyway, so Weber had an out. They had an out built into his contract where he could opt out of his contract. And so he forced the Warriors to trade him. He's like, either you trade me or I opt out and I can go sign with anybody. So they had to make that deal in that way. So anyway, you know,
that's I remember
years ago. But here's what happened. So Nelly leaves the Warriors, and I think he immediately goes to the Knicks. And then he doesn't even last the year with the Knicks, I don't think. So then that would have been the Dallas thing after that, I believe.
Yeah, so Dallas, 97 to 2005. Then Avery Johnson was there. He took him to the finals in 2006 when they lost to Miami. Going back, apparently Mavericks started in 1980. I thought they were the 70s, but Dick Motta, who's well-known, you know, he's
the
like
long-time coach.
Bill Fitch, Cotton Fitzsimmons, you know, guys like that. John McLeod, a couple years, also coached Notre Dame. Richie Adubato, I remember that name now because I'd buy hoops cards and I'd always get Richie Adubato. Gar Hurd, Quinn Buckner, Dick Motta again. Jim Clemens, 96-97. So
former Phil Jackson assistant.
Yeah, so each 1 year for each of those guys. So I think there's some Jason Kidd, Jimmy Jackson, although he got traded, Jamal Mashburn probably. I remember there was some stuff with the coaches there.
And Tony Braxton. Don't forget Tony Braxton.
Tony Braxton and Jim Jackson, yes. Tony Braxton, who also dated or married Curtis Martin, I think.
Yeah.
Don Nelson, he stayed there. Then it was Avery Johnson, Rick Carlisle, and then Jason Kidd. Carlisle was there 13 years.
Yep, title with Dirk.
Yeah, 2011. So, yeah, I didn't realize that. But, yeah, it's going to be a fun series. It's a lot of similar, I mean, as we said, both teams kind of with that interchangeable, you know, 3-and-D type of center, type of power forward. You know, as we mentioned before, with, you know, whether it's Kuminga or Looney or Toscano Anderson, Dorian Finney-Smith, Maxi Kleber, got a lot of versatile big men in this series. It's going to come down, obviously, to can they contain Luka. So it'll be fun. What did you see? I don't know how much of game one you watched last night with Miami and the Celtics, but what do you see in this series? Because you told me through text you think Celtics are the best team left in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think they have the best team left in the playoffs. The only thing that worries me about them is this home court advantage thing, because they had to play two really tough series right out of the gate, right? Like they did beat up Brooklyn.
Yeah, which
but they also, quick side note.
Golden State has the best. They have home field advantage.
Yeah, home court for the rest of the rest of the playoffs. So the thing that I was worried about was just the sort of the weight of this game one because of that crazy series with Milwaukee. Then they had to turn around and come back a couple days later, and I was looking at it like Miami has to win game one, and they probably have to win game two and hold home court advantage because eventually Boston's a younger team. Fresher legs. They will probably take a little while to kind of feel like themselves again because of that crazy series. So I fully expected Miami to win game one. I didn't expect it to go the way that it did. But if
Horford's out with COVID.
No Horford, no Smart.
No like Smart with the sprained ankle. Yeah.
Everything stacked against the Celtics in that game. If the Celtics come back and win game two, I think they may win in five or six. But Miami needs to win game two because it's sort of like one of those things where it's like the Celtics are coming. Like they are just going to, they're going to turn in a couple of games where we're just like, oh my God. And that's what I look at. You know, I think the Warriors, Miami defensively is going to pose a lot of problems for the Warriors, but I think the Warriors player for player have a really good shot at winning that series.
Yeah.
I think Boston would beat the Warriors at right now.
Really?
With the rosters the way that they are, who knows about injuries?
Boston always plays the Warriors tough though.
Always.
And you know, going back to January 6th, they had that ridiculous come from behind loss to the Knicks where overtime they hit a half court shot. That was like the low point of the season for the Celtics. Since January 6th, after that, you know, people have read about players only meetings and you know, they went to the 7-man rotation. They put Marcus Smart as the point guard. Schroeder, Jason Richardson came off the bench. Those guys were gone. They get Derek White. And pretty much a rotation with, you know, the starting five and then Derek White, Grant Williams, Robert Williams coming off the bench. And this team bought into the defense finally. There's still times where Jason Tatum is infuriating with the threes that he takes. Same thing with Jaylen Brown. But Jaylen Brown is taking a back seat to, you know, moving the ball around more and knowing that Tatum is a superstar and, you know, he's the lead dog. This is his ship kind of to steer along with Marcus Smart, but this is a miraculous turnaround. I think they're the best team left just because, you know, they're kind of like a pitcher early on in the year. Like you said, in this series, they need a little time to warm up, whether it's the, you know, cold weather or figuring out a new pitch, but then boom, once that pitcher starts, you know, third or fourth start, they start heating up, warming up, they get into a groove. And I think that's what this first game was about. They just had a disastrous third quarter and, you know, I don't think that's going to happen again. I doubted them against Milwaukee. I'm not going to doubt them again.
Yeah, I just like the way that team looks. And, you know, the reason why I know as much about the Celtics as I do know is because I listen to Simmons and, you know, every NBA podcast that he does, it's going to eventually go towards the Celtics. So sure. I feel like I know a lot about them.
Yeah.
But like it's basically what you said, which is over the years, even when the Warriors were winning the titles, Boston always played them well because they have that mindset of defense first. And, you know, Marcus Smart has always been hard on Steph, so much so that he rolled on his ankle earlier this year.
Yeah.
But like, you know, they have the length. It's been fun watching Tatum, you know, become who he is now.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's always great to see those guys take that next step. And you know, the NBA is all about that, right? The NBA, the reason why the NBA sort of is able to, like, you look at the NFL is dominated by quarterbacks in their 30s. And the NBA is dominated by the older names as well, LeBron and Steph. But if you're a big fan of the NBA, the undercurrent of great young players is kind of what keeps the hardcore fan, like, just wanting more is just this, you know, you get Luka and Ayton and Trae Young in the same draft. And then last year you get Cunningham and Mobley and Kuminga and Jalen Green all in the same draft, Herb Jones. And so it's just, there's always new young players coming into this league that are very fun to watch. And then you see someone like Tatum just take it to the next level. You're unlike wrestling, or I'd say unlike WWE, you get a payoff for watching, you know?
That draft 2017, you had Markelle Fultz going first.
Yeah.
Celtics had the first pick that year. They traded it to Philly and they got another pick. I can't remember what the pick. I think the pick turned out to be Matisse Thybul, and then they traded it back to Philly. Whatever. They ended up, Lonzo Ball went second. Jason Tatum goes third. Josh Jackson went fourth, who's just been, like, picked by Phoenix, just never got his footing under him. But, like, Tatum, I mean, you talk about, like, a Michael Jordan draft. That's, you know, Jordan had Olajuwon, then Sam Bowie ahead of him. But, like, Fultz has been hurt. He's had the yips at the free throw line. Then Lonzo's been good. Lonzo's been not what we expected, but good. But Tatum, man, you know, we're here in Boston, here in New England, I should say, we're waiting for the maturity. We're waiting for the leadership. You don't know, you know, a lot of times you don't understand where this guy's at in terms of his temperament, his maturity. But, you know, Marcus Smart, I think, plays a big part in that. And grabbing this team by the nuts and saying, listen, I'm the veteran here. I'm the point guard now. You know, putting his foot down, putting the fist down. And I'll tell you,
it's a little Rondo-ish to me, because sure. Rondo, I don't know how Rondo was with younger players, but he was kind of like the missing. You had KG, you had Pierce, who were very opinionated players, and you had Ray Allen, who was the perfect kind of complementary piece. But Rondo's like the little bulldog who runs everything.
And I sort of see
Marcus Smart in the same way. Now
Rondo was like, who's the wise ass in, was it Tanner Boyle and Bad News Bears?
Bad News Bears.
The little, you know, wise ass loudmouth, the kind of, you know, that was what Rondo was like. Smart's a little more intimidating. He's a little more, you know, he's a little more physically imposing, I think, they're both
super confident.
Yeah.
And they have that, you know, that swagger about themselves that tells the team, like, look, you guys are great, but I'm great too, because I'm running the show. Like, I, you know, if, in order for us to win, I'm running this show. And I like that about him. Now, sometimes, like, I don't remember what game it was, the Milwaukee game, where Smart ends up, you know, taking the last shot or whatever. Now, some
game
of that
five,
was because
yeah, game five.
Oh, Tatum was open on that. But, you know, a lot of that stuff happens so fast. So I didn't really blame him for that. But, you know, I think he knows. He's like, yeah, you know, well, unfortunately, that was the moment. And but, you know, he wore it, and he's like, yeah, it didn't happen. And they just moved on. And I like that, because he could have kind of sucked away from that moment. But he's like, nope, that it just didn't work. And we're moving on. And I like that.
Yeah. And in the first half yesterday, Pritchard was playing well, who really hasn't, you know, since they went to the shorter rotation, really hasn't done much. Aaron Nesmith was contributing yesterday. And so when you got guys like that coming off and contributing, who are pretty much kind of non-factors since this turn of events happened since January 6th, I'm looking forward to, I haven't read anything today about what Smart and Horford's status is for game two, but yeah, if they win game two, all you got to do is take one of these first two games. So get this one out of the books, get it, you know, get your legs under you, and you know, get back in the groove. There was a bet that a friend of mine, Paul Fontaine, I know you're listening, you know who it is. It's with someone who's in our American League Baseball League. he was talking to me on Sunday, and you can't bet on FanDuel in Massachusetts. So he'd go over the border in Connecticut. He was like, it was something, it was like plus 1200 for 12 points for Grant Williams and a Boston win. And I was like, he goes, Tom, he's been horrible. He's got, like, you know, two straight games where he's got like barely any points. I'm like, that tells me he's going to be, you know, he's got to come back. He's not going to be this bad. So anyway, he didn't, he was going to, I was like, put 20 on it. So he was going to go do it. It was plus 1200. He didn't. So, but just Paul Fontaine's a big betting guy. So I thought Paul would,
yeah, he actually, he's doing some UFC stuff for the Fight Game Media YouTube channel where he's looking at, he's a stats guy. And so he takes down all this information. He's got all this stuff that he's put together as far as like the return on investment. Like if you were to bet on each guy in all of these fights, and so who's got a really good return on investment when you bet on them. So he's kind of using that information to try and figure out some stuff. And he's doing it for our YouTube channel.
He loves that stuff, man. He loves, so it, like, he loves stats. Like in our American League only Roto League, he has his Blue Jay players. He doesn't want to trade any of them except Kikuchi. But he just, he'll release players or whatever, or make trades. I'm like, Paul, what the fuck are you doing? Like, why? He looks at the stats. He's so analytical, and he's looking at, he looks like under the numbers. He looks at trends. He's like, I love him, man. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how he finds the time, but he loves looking into betting
and you know what? He doesn't do it in a way that
no,
you know, like an analytics department would do it, right? He's like old school, like Excel spreadsheets.
yeah. Say, speaking of old school and spreadsheets and like net zero 90 stuff, I have to think of Dave with like spreadsheets and the yes. old. I was texting with LaRocca about, he's reviewing Spring Stampede for the Take It Home coming up this week. So there was, I saw that Ric Flair was doing a watch along to Chi-Town Rumble, to him and Steamboat from 89. Uh-huh. So I'm like, we put Jack to bed and there was really nothing on TV. I think it was Monday. So I'm like, I'm going to sync this up. I'm going to watch Chi-Town Rumble. So I watched it while listening to Ric Flair talk about it. And there he is. Obviously there's Dave in like his pastel Hobie, you know, mint green shirt in the front row with Brad Muster. And, it just, you couldn't take my eyes off it. I'm like looking at his reactions through like the whole match. And
yeah.
And then there was a time where they stood up and I remembered how freaking tall Brad Muster was. He was a 6'4" fullback out of Stanford. Yeah. And I was like, holy shit, this guy's like, my God, that's right. He was like one of those, you had Eric Dickerson, 6'3", but you didn't have many 6'4" running backs, even still till this day. And I was just
And then Dave's about 5'8", I would say.
Yeah.
But then Dave could just flex the bicep and go, okay, let's measure bicep
size. That's what Flair said. He goes, that was the first night I met Meltzer. He goes, I thought he was a little power lifter.
That's hilarious.
But I remember I emailed Dave a couple of years ago. I wanted a contact for Muster because I couldn't find him anywhere online, on social media. He didn't have a contact for Brad Muster either, but that's the kind of guest, Brad Muster, I would love to get on this show. So if anyone's listening and you have a contact for Brad Muster, hit me up on Twitter at Promise Thomas.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Hey, you got so much stuff going on, Fight Game Media, Network. You got all the stuff with the Bay Area sports podcast. Tell the listeners here, they're always used to you talking with John, you talking with Dave. Tell them where they can find stuff at the Fight Game and on the Bay Area Sports Network.
Yeah, so Fight Game Media, for the wrestling and the MMA and the boxing stuff, you know, we have the free network, we have the Patreon. And you can find all that information if you just go to our Twitter at Fight Game Media. Yeah, and the new thing for me is the Bay Area stuff. I've been doing a Giants podcast pretty much since the pandemic started.
Thompson to Clark.
Yeah, Thompson to Clark. Me and my buddy Brad Evans, he and I went to college together, and he was the guy at school who was like the lead broadcaster, lead play-by-play guy on, like, you know, San Jose State football and San Jose State basketball and baseball. And he also did the Giants minor league team, the single A team, the San Jose Giants. Like, he did play-by-play for them. So I was always like, ah, oh, gosh, you know, Brad's doing such cool stuff. And so over the years, the way that we kept in contact, and you'll love this, is fantasy sports. Like, he just had a league where all of us from San Jose State were involved. And so over the years, we just kept connected that way. And I was trying to always pepper him, like, hey, let's do a podcast. We need to get you back out there. And he's like, ah, I don't have time. But now his girls are a little bit older, so he's got some time. And so we've been doing this podcast now for we just hit episode 102, I think. So almost 2 years now. And so from there, I was like, the Warriors, the 49ers, like, there's got to be something there I could do. So finally, I found a 49ers podcast where they do a video show and they shoot me their audio. And so the podcast is called Red and Gold Standard. Guy by the name of Zach Hernandez, he's running it. He also runs 49ers Hive, which is kind of like the bigger thing for them. But he shoots me his audio show, and I put the audio show in the same feed as the Thompson to Clark. And we've recently started the Warriors podcast, which is called The Death Lineup. And we have been doing it. Me and my son actually
I get it in my feed, and I see The Death Lineup. I always think it's like a DFS, like a DFS feed or something. What's the meaning behind The Death Lineup?
So when the Warriors would go small with Draymond Green at center and Harrison Barnes at power forward with Iguodala, Clay, and Curry, yep, their plus minus and it was kind of like a switch. When they needed it to turn it on, they would turn it on, and then they would just blow teams out. And so one of the writers called it the death lineup. So then when KD came and Harrison Barnes left, they didn't call it the death lineup, though some people still call it the death lineup. Tim Kawakami, who's like one of my favorite writers, he called it the Hamptons Five because they all went to Hamptons to recruit KD. So that's like sort of the evolution of the death lineup. And now this lineup that the Warriors have with Steph, Clay, Draymond, Andrew Wiggins, and Jordan Poole, we were all trying to figure out what the nickname of that. My podcast, we kind of sat with Fast Five, like, we like that name, but that lineup has not been great. But anyway, so it's an ode to the first championship that the Warriors won. Whenever they needed that switch, they would just put Draymond at center, Harrison Barnes at power forward, and they would just run away from teams. And so that they called that the death lineup. So all of that is in this new feed that we basically turned the Thompson to Clark feed into the BSPN. Bay Area Sports Podcasting Network.
And it's the
school ESPN logo.
Yeah.
So that's where podcasts are available. All socials are at BSPN shows. And I don't know what you think about this, but I'm even thinking about posting TikTok videos just for engagement. So IG, TikTok, we're going to be there. I've sort of figured out how to, because my son is, you know, he's 22 and he does for his podcast.
Absolutely.
So he's teaching me stuff, and now I get to podcast with him after every war. We go live after every Warriors game.
Nice.
And then we put the audio in the podcast feed. So it's been a lot of fun. And at some point, you know, I'm going to reach my tipping point with all the stuff and I'm going to have to let something go. It hasn't happened yet. I'm still able to be successfully married and still be a good parent. I think I've probably at my apex here, and we'll have to figure out how to do with what I'm doing and not add anything else new.